Over the weekend, the Washington State University community gathered in front of Martin Stadium in Pullman to remember Tyler Helinski.
He's really a great role model on campus. He's really somebody to look up to.
He was such a humble person, a kind person. Any interaction was always so positive.
He was such a good representation of Wazoo that I think that's why it's impacted us, because he was such a good human.
The 21-year-old quarterback was found dead in his apartment last week, an apparent suicide. After the news came out about Helinski's death, Seattle Times sports columnist Matt Calkins wrote about his own struggles with depression and suicidal thoughts. Calkins wants people to be more open about what they're going through. He told me he first started to feel anxiety and depression when he was a teenager.
I remember I'd go on like high school debate trips and I wouldn't say a word for like 3 days until I was actually debating. I was fine. Same thing when I did play-by-play radio. I'd get on the mic and be, you know, highly entertaining according to people who would listen, but then I'd get on the bus later and I would just completely shut down. And sometimes that would lead to depression. And, you know, sometimes if I maybe didn't feel like I was keeping up with my peer group or whatnot, I would really get into my own head and I just couldn't shake it. So I'd say in one form or another, this has been affecting me for a good 20 years or so.
To the point where you, as you write, you actually considered taking your life as well.
Yeah, there were times later in my life where I was, you know, maybe just because I didn't feel like where I wanted to be in life, or maybe I was just, I'd get out of these social situations and I would just be so flustered and I go, how do I fix this? And, you know, there'd be times where I'm turning to alcohol, you know, to kind of soothe that discomfort. But there'd be times where I was going on to Google and like looking up like the most effective way to take your own life. Like, oh, a shotgun is the easiest way. This carries the most risks and all that stuff, which is kind of horrifying when I look back on it. But I also know that it's a lot more common than people would think. I use the word fantasizing about suicide because it is a coping device for a lot of people. They think about it. How do I get out of this? Okay, well, I can always take my own life. Not a healthy way to think about it, but that's why they do it.
It's comforting in a way because it's an exit lane.
Yeah.
Yeah. You first wrote about your own depression, suicidal thoughts, mm-hmm. when that Hall of Famer linebacker, mm-hmm. Junior Seau, took his life in 2012. That's a big step. Mm-hmm. What was the reaction from people who had no idea what you were going
right.
through?
So that one was a lot more difficult for me to write. That one, I called my mom and dad beforehand and said, hey, listen, this is what I'm writing. I called my sister, some friends, and said, hey, this is what I'm writing. I emailed some really close friends, say, hey, what do you think about this? I was really nervous what the reaction would be.
Well, how much did your family know about what you were going through?
They knew that I'd seen counselors before. They knew that I'd been on different medications. They didn't know it got quite as dark as it did. I mean, that in that column, I was looking up different plans. You know, make a rock climbing suicide look like an accident, despair, my family's pain, like as the guy who killed himself. So, I mean, I was really
open. You were thinking it out.
Those were things that I was thinking about constantly. And again, it was like a coping device. I didn't feel good where I was at in life. I couldn't get out of this funk, but I also wasn't trying that hard through the traditional ways of, you know, talking to people. I was just kind of hoping it would go away, and it didn't. But my family was extremely supportive. I mean, they were surprised, but, you know, they were very supportive, and so was the local community. So that gave me a lot more confidence going forward when I had a much bigger platform in the Seattle Times that people would probably be able to relate to this.
I think a lot of us want to know, Matt, what got you to get help? What helped you?
The first time I went to a counselor was my senior year of college. I was at Loyola Marymount, as I mentioned, and I'd gone through a breakup, and I just couldn't quite get over it. That was sort of the fire in the kitchen that got me in there, but I had to remodel the whole house anyway because there were other issues that I was dealing with. And a lot of people find therapy to be cathartic the first time, but I think where it's really effective is when you stick with it and they give you different coping strategies. And sometimes they put you on medication, which I think a lot of people are reluctant to admit they're on, or people have the wrong idea about it, like it mutes your life when it really doesn't. It just kind of gets you to the ground floor. I'm still able to laugh hysterically at, you know, a stand-up comedian, or cry at the end of Field of Dreams. I mean, there's nothing that I don't feel that I didn't feel before. Just when the times where it would get out of hand, that's kind of where I've been able to get it under control.
What about a change in attitude? You write, you said something really remarkable, I thought, in your column. You said, my brain hasn't always been good to me.
Yeah.
And most people don't talk about their brains as separate from themselves.
Right.
What did you figure out?
Well, I think that's what's important to talk about here, is to not distinguish a physical illness from a mental illness in terms of how you would treat it or how you would talk about it. You know, I don't think that Prozac should be viewed any differently than amoxicillin. I don't think depression should be viewed any differently than diabetes. These are just problems that we have. And so we got to remove that stigma, because people who are reluctant to get mental health because they're afraid they're going to get judged or because they feel like it's a sign of weakness really shouldn't burden themselves with that. They should be able to get help like they would anything else.
How have you felt that stigma? How have you experienced that?
I've experienced, I think, just in my own head, where I felt like, you know, admitting these things were a sign of weakness. And, you know, there'd be times where I would check off the list, like, are you depressed? Yes. Are you anxious? Yes. Are you feeling suicidal? And I would say no, even though I definitely was, just because I didn't want the doctor to be judging me. I definitely wouldn't bring this stuff up with my parents. I definitely wouldn't bring it up with my friends, because it just kind of, I think the thought in your head is that it's just going to freak them out. Like, I don't want to burden them with this. This is just too dark. Have I received judgment as a result of, you know, admitting mental weakness or being on medication? Not verbally, nothing that I can really tell. So I don't know that I've really felt the stigma on that end, but people
don't. That's interesting, yeah. Because maybe the stigma isn't anymore what we think it is.
Yeah, that's possible. It's possible, and I hope that's the case. But I still know a lot of people are reluctant to talk about this kind of stuff. And maybe even for men a little bit more, just because, you know, they're supposed to be the rocks. And for them to show any kind of weakness might, in their minds, affect how different people judge them. So I hope I'm wrong, but I don't think I am.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, here you are. You're this public job, you know, you're successful, you're writing a column, and in your writing to say, I got help. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't sound like, your column didn't seem like a cry for help.
Right.
I am lost and I don't know what to do, which is, yeah, a different feeling.
Mm-hmm.
But that's important for us to know. Like, how on it do you think you are? How are you doing today?
I think I'm doing pretty well. It's hard to tell what normal is, right? I don't know how everyone else feels. I know how I felt when I'm feeling really good and, you know, feeling stable and feel like I'm on my right medication. But there are still times where I'll get down on myself, and there are still times where I'll be in social situations and be kind of uncomfortable. And I don't know if that's just natural, or I don't know if that's, you know, some of the symptoms coming back. Here's a good example. I got an email from someone who said, you know, Matt, I read your column and, you know, I used to be suicidal myself, and then I got help and my quote normal self can't recognize that desperate self that wanted to take my own life. And that's kind of how I feel. That really resonated with me. But there was a time where, you know, I was so depressed and it wouldn't go away. It was 3 months, 4 months, 5 times, and I wasn't getting medication, I wasn't getting therapy, and I never felt like I would get out of it. I never felt like I was going to feel good again. And now I don't feel like I can ever get to that point where I'd want to take my own life, or I don't feel like there's anything to live for. So that just goes to show, I think, how much brain chemistry is part of all this and just getting everything right, because it's strange how our dark selves can't always recognize our more effervescent selves. And so to answer your question, I think I'm pretty on it right now, but it's something that you got to stay on, because you can fool yourself into thinking that you're fine and stop seeing a therapist, stop taking your medication, and you can go down that dark hole again.
I'm talking with Seattle Times sports columnist Matt Calkins. How much is sports a part of this? You wrote about this WSU quarterback who did complete suicide. You're a sports columnist.
Mm-hmm.
How are depression and suicidal thoughts different for athletes, if they are?
I don't know that they are. These things don't discriminate. Junior Seau was as macho of a guy as you can find, a Hall of Fame linebacker for the Chargers, who had seemingly, you know, the world by a string, and he shot himself in the heart. Michael
this
Phelps.
This is about 5 or 6 years ago.
Yeah, this is about 5 or 6 years ago. You know, we were talking before about Michael Phelps. You know, after every Olympics, he was extremely depressed.
After Olympic domination.
Right, yeah.
4 golds,
right.
2 silvers, and he said this weekend.
Right.
Yeah, that he was thinking of committing suicide.
That's wild. It's not wild to me, because I get it. I remember there was a wheelchair racer that I covered when I was at the Vancouver Columbian, and he was born without femurs, and he used to, but just dominated, and would just dedicate his life to finding every spare millisecond he could find so that he could win. He ended up becoming the most accomplished wheelchair racer in the world. But he said his entire motivation was to make up for the fact that he didn't have femurs, and it didn't matter that it was just that you pour the water into the cup, but the cup never fills up, that kind of thing. And I bet that's true of a lot of athletes who are so dedicated to proving themselves that they're the best, and they're so driven by this that often it leads to, you know, not having the healthiest approach to life mentally.
Yeah, so now we're not just talking about brain chemistry and pharmaceuticals, but an approach to life.
Yeah.
Is there something that you want to tell us about that from your experience?
It's important to know when you're happy. That's kind of one thing I've realized is that I think when we start off and we're younger and maybe we're really motivated, we want to do whatever we can to get to the top, to have the best job or the, you know, the flashiest car and all the toys. And I think, you know, for me, I used to really drive myself crazy needing to write the perfect story. I would never take a word off. Every sentence had to be clever. Every paragraph had to have a perfect transition. It's not to say that I'm not working hard right now. I take my job very seriously. I'm very lucky to have what I have. But yeah, you can really get in your own way doing that. And it's kind of like the Michael Phelps thing. All right, let's say I did write the perfect story and I win an award for it. Okay, that feels good for about a day. And then it's like, okay, what's next? And that's not healthy. That's not what it should be. You should be able to just enjoy. Maybe not even necessarily make happiness the goal every time. Like, how do I make myself happy? Just go about your daily life, do what you want to do, do what you feel you should be doing. And I think that makes it a lot easier. So yeah, it's not just pop a pill and you're better. These are some of the coping strategies and strategies of life that therapists will help you with, is say, all right, just look at it this way. Here's what other people have gone through. Here's what studies suggest. And I think that you become a lot happier and a lot more content as a result.
Matt, what's a reaction you've gotten from your writing that tells you whether you've had an effect?
Oh, I don't know that I can provide enough reactions. I mean, I have reactions to spare, I should say. I mean, one was that, hey, listen, I haven't been wanting to go to therapy. I've been reluctant to do it. I'm going to do it now. Or my son doesn't want to admit that anything's wrong with him. He's kind of ashamed of his mental diagnosis. I'm going to show him your article right now to show, hey, look, this is more common than you think. I've gotten 500 emails probably, if not more. And let's, you know, I'll maybe get 5 for a typical Seahawks article. Or if it's really controversial, I might get 50. So it has definitely made an impact. And if it saved one person's life, that's great. And if it makes one person's life better even, then I think it's very rewarding.
Do you think you're part of a big change? Is something going on that maybe we're coming out of a dark age when it comes to how we think about depression and mental health and suicide?
You know, I've heard the argument made that people are less happy now than they were like 30 years ago. And I hope that's not the case, but I've, you know, heard people suggest that. But I do think we're at an age too where we can come out and say, hey, listen, I'm taking this, or hey, I'm going to go see a therapist, or, you know, I've been having these thoughts as well. And people are just more open about it. I think the stigma is declining. I do think that, but I think it's there, and hopefully it vanishes altogether one day.
Well, Matt Calkins, Seattle Times sports writer, I think you're right about the idea of the danger of comparison.
Right.
And when I think of the sports world, I think of how stark is the comparison there. You got this many yards or you didn't. Here's the score. You either won this medal or you didn't.
Yeah. Or even salary. People might be making $10 million a year, but if somebody else at their position is making $11 million and they think they're just as good, you know, it'll drive them crazy.
Yeah. But a lot of us who read or will read your column who are not even in the sports world, I think we can all relate to comparison, keeping up with what we're supposed to be, and trying to get through this life in a balanced way.
Yeah,
it's hard to do.
It is.
I really appreciate you writing the column.
Well, I appreciate you having me on. Thank you very much.